I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm reminded of those Patriots fans who were finding us on social before the season began, worried about whether or not the Patriots would win a game or three games, or whether or not they would manage to stay even remotely relevant. We don't know when or if, I should say, the move to Drake May will come this season, but it was good to see him on the field, and we'll hear from Jerod Mayo moving forward. Although I would say that as a head coach, he's far more concerned about all the missed tackles that they had on defense than he is about the quarterback right now. Jacoby Brissett is going to feel a lot like Caleb Williams after this game, bruised and maybe a little sore, but he manages it well. The fact that there was just the one fumble was a big deal, considering that he was under siege a good portion of the game. We're glad to have you with us. That was a quick hour between Shohei Ohtani's historic night and the start of week three in the NFL season. And we'll get to some of the other big games as we move through these next 3 hours and usher in a Friday. The poll is up. Are you ready? The After Hours Game of the Week poll. And as I say, there are some strange matchups, but reposting now at A-Law Radio. It's also up on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. I'll get it up on our Facebook page as soon as possible. But we've chosen these four: the 2-0 Houston Texans against the 2-0 Minnesota Vikings. And at the end of my conversation with Antoine Staley before the top of the hour, I asked him how much chatter there's been about Sam Darnold in the Jets building or among Jets reporters. And he said not so much yet, but he does expect it. It will happen because they take on the Vikings, Jets and Vikings. That's a London game actually coming up in, I think it's early October. We've also got the Eagles, who are now 1-1 and had that stunning and, I would say, not just frustrating, but brutal loss in the late stages on Monday night to the Atlanta Falcons. And so you've got Eagles on the road at the Saints, who have been terrific to start the season. And I'm not sure if you saw the headline with Derek Carr. This one caught my attention. He was fined. Now, he was flagged during the game, but he's been fined by the NFL for his MJ dance. And if you don't know what that means, well, it means that he was grabbing his crotch. Not something I ever envisioned that Derek Carr would do. Call me crazy. I guess I didn't realize he had that side to him. But yes, he was fined by the NFL for the fact that after his touchdown, he did a Michael Jackson dance, or a move, I should say. He grabbed at his junk. So the NFL decided that it was sexually suggestive and offensive. And so he, not only did he get the unsportsmanlike conduct flag, but I should say he wasn't flagged. It was flagged on the broadcast because it was Derek Carr and it was a crotch grab. But it wasn't flagged on the field by the officials. So maybe they were surprised too. Apparently Carr decided that he had to follow through with a promise he made to his family. So he told them that if he did if he had a touchdown, if he scored a touchdown, he would do a dance by MJ. Now, he said after the game on Sunday, this is in Dallas, so the Saints are flying pretty high. He says, people don't know a lot of stuff about me. Well, I'll raise my hand when it comes to this. Weddings or birthdays, I'm always dancing. One time I hit the Michael Jackson and my brothers were like, bro, you have to do that if you score. All right, I think we've seen it enough. I think everybody was in shock. So yes, he got fined, though we don't know the the full number. People are putting it in the ballpark of, say, a $15,000 fine, which kind of lines up with unsportsmanlike conduct as a first-time offense. So, yes, sexually suggestive or offensive. I don't know, seeing Derek Carr do that, not sure if it was that offensive, but it was funny. So the Saints are feeling themselves, and they're off to a 2-0 start. Had huge offensive numbers again, this time against Dallas in week two, and now they will host the Eagles in week three. Another game, and this is with the Lions coming off the loss to the Bucks. They hit the road for the first time in the desert against the Cardinals. And gosh, did you guys see that story about Dan Campbell having to sell his home? We'll get to that coming up because that's pretty nutso. And then the final one we put in there, the Ravens and the Cowboys. Ravens are 0-2 for the first time in 9 years. And they had their home opener last week. Also a stunning final quarter for them. Maybe not quite as abrupt and astounding as the Eagles loss, but pretty close after they coughed up a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter to the Raiders. They'll be in Dallas in Arlington, AT&T Stadium against the Cowboys. So those are the four games that we've picked. I actually don't know which one is tops on my list. I'm just going to randomly vote for one and see if I get the one that no one else votes for, because that's usually what happens. So again, at Amy After Hours, and I'll make sure I put that post up on our Facebook page. 855-212-4227. I did share that Shohei Ohtani stat line on both of our social media sites as well. It's one of those that, even if there's not history on the line, it's an eye popper. I almost use the eyeball emojis. It's pretty incredible. So remember this, September 19th, 2024, where were you when? A career high 6 hits, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 2 stolen bases, 10 RBI, a handful of franchise records, and now baseball's first 50-50 athlete, with the 51 homers and 51 steals in the same season. A couple of you have responded, no, wait, there was another 50-50 with Albert Bell. He had 50 home runs and 50 doubles. Well, yes, and we've had athletes with 50 home runs and 50 strikeouts. We've had athletes with 50 home runs and 50 putouts in a season. It's not about any random 50-50. You know that when we use the 50-50, we're talking about the home runs and the stolen bases. And so it's not ever been done. And he's sitting on 51 and 51. I'm not going to put anything past the guy. I can't imagine 60-60 is still in play. But again, he's Shohei Ohtani, and we should know better at this point to limit him. He's been doing interviews on MLB Network, actually talking to Pedro Martinez, which is kind of fun. And he also did speak in English to his clubhouse briefly. It wasn't a big statement. It was mostly just kind of deflecting the attention, I think, turning it more to the playoffs. And you can imagine how excited he is to be able to get to the postseason into October. And this is why he joined the Dodgers, remember? Yes, the money, of course. But he was going to make money anywhere he went. I think what stood out to me and why the Angels couldn't keep him is that he really wanted to be able to participate in the playoffs. And that's what we'd heard from him. Oh, from Ipe Mitsuhara, who used to be his translator. Remember that? That's how the Dodgers started the season. Now they end the season with Shohei Ohtani closing in on 55-55. We've never had that either. I think I heard Joe Davis say it. We'll use his TV calls coming up a little bit later. But he phrased it this way: Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club. That's pretty sweet. I like that way of putting it together. So yeah, you can weigh in on either Facebook or on Twix, and also on the phones. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So yeah, take our poll for the game of the week as well as we move through this final show of the work week. I have to ask you guys for advice about a homeowner situation myself, because I really don't know what to do. But that's not the reason why Dan Campbell had to sell his house. So I'm dealing with a neighbor issue. He's dealing with something entirely different, if you haven't seen this story. But it actually caught producer Pete's attention, and I think it's pretty astounding as well, considering what we heard from Will Levis. If you have the Will Levis, I know it's in our folder, Pete, if you want to bring it back, on the heels of of what we heard from Will Levis about how he had to change his phone number this week because somehow it became public.
The thing I'm actually doing today, like, get a new phone number. I don't know how my number got out there to the fans, but I got a lot of texts. So that'll be nice to shut that part of life behind me. And I haven't opened social in the last couple of weeks. So, I just think that's the healthiest way to go about it. And I don't want to or care to see any things that people say about me. And I'm just going to keep chugging along regardless of what they say. So, but it sucks that the world is the way that it is, and looking forward to having some privacy.
Oh, I so agree with that. And I'm not Will Levis. I'm not an NFL quarterback. But it does suck that the world is the way that it is. People ask me all the time, why aren't you sharing photos of your husband? Well, because he and I have agreed that with the way technology is now, with the way social media is now, facial recognition is such that we're pretty confident that if we post photos of him, number one, they never go away. Number two, it's a lot easier to figure out what my new legal last name is, what his last name is, and where you can find us. And that scares me. I've had two pretty serious stalkers, as well as some other kind of weird interactions online. But one serious stalker who was trying to figure out where I lived a few years ago and was threatening to kill me. I do not want in any way to assist someone who wants to find out where I live. And it would be, we think, easier if my husband and his name, not just first name, but last name, were out there. And so that's why we've chosen to protect our privacy as a couple. And hearing about Dean Campbell's situation underscores this for me. Again, I'm not an NFL head coach, but people are crazy everywhere. Campbell has to sell his suburban home in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. So it's suburban Detroit, because he needs some more privacy. He didn't want to talk a whole lot about it. He was just telling a business outlet in Detroit that the home is beautiful. It's on 2 acres. But this is the quote that jumped out at people. It's just that people figured out where we lived when we lost. He didn't want to say a whole lot more than that, but Fox 2 in Detroit, which is actually the outlet where Dan Miller is an anchor, so he's also the play-by-play voice of the Lions Radio Network. So Fox 2 was reporting that Campbell's home address got leaked somehow to the public, and that he and his family started getting pranked and they were harassed at home after the Lions lost, including the NFC Championship game. Think about the season for the Lions last year. People are so excited to the point where they've got 750,000 fans that show up over the course of the 3-day NFL draft that takes place in their city. It is all, it's all euphoria around the Lions right now, and they're expected to be a Super Bowl contender. And yet, even with all that excitement about a new regime, a new era, a new standard, a new culture, they lose a few games. Again, they won 12 games last year and 2 playoff games. They lose a few games and they get pranked and harassed to the point where they've had to file police reports. That's how bad it's gotten. The town police department released a statement as well, asking that fans respect the privacy of individuals and their families. But Dan Campbell and his wife, they've gone ahead and it's already got a deal or a pending sale. But they listed their home this week, and it was within 24 hours they already had a contract. It sucks that he has to go through this. It sucks that he has to move. They love their home and they have to move because people figured out where he lives. I'm glad that they're going to get the privacy, and I hope that they're able to protect their address. Hope that they're able to protect their location. Maybe it's a gated community. That would, I think, would probably be the best option. And you would understand why celebrities and entertainers, some cases athletes, live in gated communities because they want to have an extra level of protection and privacy. It's not so much because they're being elitist, but this is the kind of crap that happens. I hate this for Dan Campbell. Will Levis, it's just a phone number. Campbell actually had to pick up and move his family so that he could protect them. And that sucks. It sucks that fans are that maniacal. They're that out of touch. They're that disrespectful, illogical, irrational, and somehow believe that it's their right not just to heckle and to boo athletes or coaches at stadiums. Now when they're leaving stadiums, when they see them outside the game environment, outside of a game, of an event. We know that college athletes, actually as well as pro athletes, are now constantly getting bombarded once their Venmo information is out there or their email addresses are out there. They're getting bombarded by fans and or bettors who've lost money and want to blame them, want to ask them to pay for the losses. It's out of control. And as much as I know we love sports and it's the access that drives it, right? So it's not just about the games. It's not just about what we see week to week in the NFL. We love the podcast. We love hearing these guys talk about what happened on the field. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the extra access. They've got their own social media accounts, right? So we can communicate with them or hear from them on a more personal level without the middleman. All that's great. But somehow there is a rabid segment of the fan base in this country that doesn't know where to draw a line. We know this is pretty standard now. It's sickening, but it's standard that when an athlete is deemed responsible for a loss, especially a surprising one, a major mistake. And I do not in any way believe that Saquon Barkley is responsible for the Eagles' loss on Monday night. The Eagles wouldn't have been in position to win the game without Saquon Barkley. But he dropped that ball on third down and immediately was pinpointed by a lot of people for how the Eagles lost that game. Dumb. I don't know this for sure, but I am confident that he received some trash on social media, and I wouldn't be surprised if he received death threats. Right, because some big badass on social media is going to somehow put together a plot to kill Saquon Barkley. I mean, it's all talk. Most of it is just hot air and bravado, probably alcohol or drug infused, but it's not okay. And unfortunately, when it comes to the internet, it's almost impossible to police it. But this is the kind of stuff that celebrities deal with. This is the kind of crap that fans feel entitled to say or do. Harass and prank and threaten athletes because they didn't make a catch or make a kick or make the throw or come up with the big hit. I mean, it's out of control. But two incidents, it's week two, for heaven's sakes. Two incidents, one with a player, one with a coach, in which somehow their info has been made public. And once it's out there, fans are going to take advantage. And I know it's not the majority of fans, but it's far too many. It's thousands of fans that take it upon themselves to take out their frustration, their angst, their anger on a coach or a player in their personal lives. I hate it. And I'm bummed for Dan Campbell and his wife, though I hope that, as I say, they're in a gated community now and they've got an extra level of protection. Good for Will Levis. Do you know that's why Kevin Harlan decided to get off social media? Kevin Harlan, he might be the best play-by-play announcer we have in our country. And yet, he decided to get off social media because it was toxic. That's what he told me. It's a tough world to navigate as a public figure. And it's an unfair fight. There's no way you can win a fight, quote unquote, on social media as a public figure. So I understand why more and more people are staying away from it. And certainly if I'm a celebrity, entertainer, actor, athlete, I think I probably don't ever look at my mentions. Or maybe it's only from people who are verified, although that's a murky territory now too. Sucks for Dan, sucks for Will, but I hope now they found some level and level of protection, but also just a buffer, a level and a buffer of protection now that they've had to make these changes. And I hope they're happier now too, feeling a little safer. At A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page as well, glad to have you with us. Please vote for the Game O the Week, After Hours Game O the Week. I'm glad to have you with us, 855-212-4227. Gerard Mayo puts in his rookie quarterback at the end of the loss to the Jets. What does it mean, if anything? Plus, the Guardians clinch a playoff spot on the same night that the Dodgers do. So we'll have to update you on playoff standings. Man, the AL Central deserves some major attention. Right now, in these final stages of the regular season, you've got four teams. Mariners are only two out, but four teams for three AL wildcard spots. Three of those four are from the Central. Wow. How did that happen? That's a real good question. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The first thing, I got to look at myself in the mirror and make sure that, you know, I did everything I could to get the guys ready to go. And, you know, based on the score today, I need to do more. But going back to what I said earlier, just got to hit the reset button. It's NFL football, and we have to get better.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Gerard Mayo starts by looking at himself in the mirror and trying to get better. And certainly, as much as he cut his coaching teeth under Bill Belichick and played under Bill Belichick and won championships, the fact is there's a major learning curve when you are a first-time NFL head coach. And now he's the man in charge, and the buck stops with him. And not only do you have the management of players and your own coaching staff, but also time and tape. And certainly the buck stops with you when it comes to speaking to the media as well. And let's not forget, the Patriots are starting over in a way. They were also missing a couple of offensive linemen. And this is a rebuilding year. It's a transitional year where he needs to build his own culture, put his own stamp on the Patriots, and also get the personnel in place that he wants. So it's a slower burn when you're starting with what the Patriots had. But at the same time, people think highly of him. You've already heard players talk about his management style and his communication style. Much more collaborative than it was with Bill Belichick. And while they do have some holdovers, you know, he's starting fresh here and soon could have the franchise quarterback out there on the field. If you missed it, the final 4 minutes and 24 seconds were Drake Mays with that was the last drive with the Patriots. I think it went 17, 18 snaps. So it was a long drive and they were able to extend. They got into the red zone. They were able to extend that possession enough that they did not have to give the ball back to the New York Jets. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get back to Gerard Mayo about the defense, but how about a potential quarterback change? What, Gerard?
I don't know. Look, we talk about every single week, you know, you're competing for a job. So we'll get together as a coaching staff and see where it goes.
It was tough sledding for either quarterback. Jacoby Brissett was sacked 5 times. Drake May was only out there for 4.5 minutes, and he got sacked twice. So, yeah, you got to be able to take hits right now, especially missing two guys on the O-line.
I'm a big man. I can take it. You know, I'm always get back up. You know, that's one thing about me. I'm always get back up. You know, and finding ways to make plays, man. That's what it comes down to. You know, it's football. I'm supposed to get hit. You know, I didn't sign up for this sport to not get hit. So, I don't really pay attention to that.
I know. I might sign up for the sport if I didn't have to get hit. No, thank you. But yeah, Jacoby Brissett says, I'm a big man. I can take it. And he did get up every single time. Did he hear what Jerod Mayo had to say about a potential change at QB?
I'm not going to overreact to something that I didn't hear. So, yeah.
I guess that's a no. Really, the bigger problem was the defense, the inability to get much of a pass rush on Aaron Rodgers. And he sidestepped a little bit, looked more mobile than he had in the first couple games. But the fact that they had a ton of missed tackles and that they gave up 400 yards of offense and the time of possession really favored the Jets in such a major way. The Patriots defense couldn't get off the field, which meant they were worn out by the end of the game. So, yeah, I know that the quarterback spot will get a lot of the attention. But if you think about the larger issue here, I mean, it certainly would help if the offense could have been able to generate a couple of longer drives, simply because that gives the defense a blow. So it kind of works in tandem. But the offensive line could not protect either quarterback and couldn't in any way create running lanes. So Ramondre Stevenson was limited as well, only 78 total rushing yards for the New England Patriots. And even in the loss to the Seattle Seahawks in overtime last week, they were able to run the ball to the tune of, I think it was 185 yards. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I could give you Drake May's stats, but he was out there for an extended drive. He completed some passes. He got sacked a couple of times. But yeah, as soon as Jerod Mayo was asked about the quarterback job, media is able to get to Drake May, the rookie, and ask what about him getting ready to potentially start.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I'm doing, week in, week out. I'll be ready to, when my name is called, my number's called, I'll go out there and try to make some plays. So anytime, I've been preparing like I'm the starter, and at the same time, Kobe, I've been there for Kobe. He battled tonight. I mean, kept on getting up every time, jogging off, encouraging the guys on the sideline. So he made some great throws tonight.
It's hard to hear because of what's happening in the locker room, but he was complimentary of Jacoby. He got up every time. He was on the sidelines. He was encouraging guys. He was helping me. So, yeah, that's what the leader, QB1, is supposed to do when he's a veteran, and you know that the rookie is the maid-in-waiting. You know what I mean. I was thinking Robin Hood there, lady in waiting. Anyway, so Drake May at some point will likely take over, but it's not a better situation with the offensive line than it was in preseason. This O-line is rough. I guess you could say it's a work in progress, but missing guys for injuries and the way that they performed in this game, at least. Now, the Jets are tough, and this is without Hassan Reddick, and it's without Jermaine Johnson. They do still have a pass rush, and as we heard from Antoine Staley last hour, they also brought a lot of guys in the blitz, so trying to take advantage of a messy offensive line for the Patriots. So maybe it's not this bad in every game, and in order to protect your QB, well, you got to be able to run the ball. That's one of the ways that you prevent all of these extra hits. But 7 sacks, 15 QB hits for the Jets defense. Again, I don't know if that's the situation where you want to throw your rookie quarterback. Larger concern for Jerod Mayo is the fact that his defense was not tough.
Very uncharacteristic, and it's one of the things I'm very disappointed in as a defensive-minded coach. Especially, the second level, we struggled all day as far as tackling. Once again, even when we hit them in the backfield, just the lack of fundamentals, the lack of discipline, and the lack of just execution definitely continued to show up.
Probably exhausted toward the end of the game. But yeah, 14 missed tackles. It's maybe not something that shows up in a stat sheet, but it is something that coaches chart and that they harp on. You never know how one tackle made can be a turning point. At the very least, can get your defense off the field if we're talking third down. At A-Law Radio, I'm going to put up the Game of the Week poll on our Facebook page as soon as we get to the break here. 855-212-4227. What is the After Hours Game of the Week? What game are you jazzed up about in week number 3? Though we've got the odd matchups conference to conference, but we'll look at a few of them and some of the challenges. Also, some of the questions that we hope are answered finally in week number 3. And still mixing in some baseball as well. Also, is the end of the WNBA regular season. Some of the numbers for the Indiana Fever in terms of cumulative viewership this year, wowzers. I can only imagine what it's going to be like in the postseason. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Carlos Ortiz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Thank you, Amy. The Jets look like they're finally getting their return on investment.
And that might do it. And the Patriots are going to let the clock expire. So the final score here at MetLife Stadium. The Jets 24 and the Patriots 3. And the Jets improve to 2-1 and get an all-important home divisional win against New England.
Bob Wischusen on the call. Jets Radio Network just dispatched the Patriots with a final score of 24-3. Patriots quarterback Jacoby Brissett left the game in the fourth quarter with an injury, which allowed Drake May to make his NFL debut, who also felt the pressure of the Jets defense, who came away with 7 sacks on the quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers throws for 281 yards with a pair of touchdowns. Jets will now get 10 days off and host the Broncos in week 4. Patriots fall to 1-2 and will try to bounce back against the 49ers. Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson optimistic that he'll be good to go this weekend versus the Texans.
Feels great. Every day it feels a lot better. So, just taking it day by day, staying in the treatment room and just working with those guys to make sure that I'm feeling, fantastic, Sunday.
Jefferson was limited in practice Wednesday and Thursday as he recovers from a right quadricep contusion. Newly benched Carolina Panthers quarterback Bryce Young spoke today for the first time since losing the starting role to Andy Dalton. He said the decision caught him off guard, but he respects what Dave Canales had to say. In baseball, with 51 home runs and 51 stolen bases on the season, Shohei Ohtani becomes the first 50-50 player in Major League history, and the Dodgers flush the Marlins 20-4. Dodgers improved to 91-62. Other baseball finals, Mets club the Phillies 10-6. New York now 2 games behind the Padres for the top wildcard spot. Braves roll past the Reds 15-3. Guardians gouge the Twins 3-2. Blue Jays silence the Rangers 4-0. Mariners hold off the Yankees 3-2. Rays double the Red Sox 4-2. Pirates topple the Cardinals 3-2. Nick Gonzalez with a go-ahead RBI single in the 8th. Orioles knock off the Giants 5-3. Cubs beat the Nationals 7-6. And the Astros handle the Angels 3-1. Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian announced quarterback Arch Manning will make his first start on Saturday night against Louisiana Monroe. Quinn Ewers still recover from an injured oblique. And in the WNBA, Diana Taurasi gets a curtain call as the Mercury play their final home game of the regular season. WNBA postseason starts on Sunday. I'm Carlos Ortiz.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Off and running into week 3 of the NFL and week 4 of college football, if you can believe it.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They have seen by now the number one team in the country, according to the AP, will have a quarterback change. And, of course, injuries affect college football in a similar way as they do the NFL. And that means skill positions, including QBs. But this is a little bit of a strange situation, unique, I would say, with the Longhorns, because Quinn Ewers was considered the Heisman Trophy frontrunner following the Michigan game. So the Longhorns go on the road. They win at the Big House in Ann Arbor. Ewers picks apart that Michigan defense, admittedly not the championship defense from a year ago, but he vaults himself into that top position as Heisman Trophy frontrunner. Now, you don't win a Heisman in September, so it's all about projecting and odds and all that kind of stuff. But he started out the game against UTSA in week 3 with solid performance until he got hit and seemed to get banged up. And then abruptly was out of the game at the end of, I'm trying to remember if it was the third quarter or not. Maybe it was the end of the first half. And so he, at the time we didn't know, but he seemed to be kind of feeling the area underneath his chest pad and kind of down below the rib cage. What we found out after the fact is that it was an oblique injury and just painful. So he was out there in street clothes. Arch Manning comes in, and yes, the nephew son of Cooper, nephew of Peyton and Eli, grandson of Archie, can also play football and has the speed element that we didn't see from his uncles. He definitely did not get the foot speed from Peyton or Eli. I frequently describe them as having cinder blocks for feet. So he goes out there. He runs for 67 yards for a touchdown. He throws a touchdown pass on his very first attempt. Has 5 scores overall. Now imagine, you're the number one team in the land. You've started out 3-0. It's your first year in the SEC. The guy that you're behind is the Heisman Trophy favorite, and you come in and have a performance like that. So it's a good problem to have if you're Coach Sarkisian at Texas, but also think about the chatter. It reminded me a little bit of producer Pete, you may remember, Alabama, when they had Jalen Hurts as their starter, but had Tua Tagovailoa in the waiting, and the fact that they went into, I think it was Jalen's senior year with a quarterback competition, Tua ends up winning it. Jalen did spell him in I think it was the SEC championship because Tua got hurt. And so we did see Jalen later in that year, but he ultimately transfers and goes to Oklahoma for his grad year. Tua takes over. So that was a college battle too, and it just had so much attention on it. I don't know whether or not Coach Sark, and maybe he doesn't know either, whether or not this coaching staff, Coach Sark, will make a change to Arch when Quinn is healthy. I suppose it remains to be seen how they're playing and who they've got coming up on their schedule and just how quickly Quinn can get healthy. But what we do know is that it's the number one team in the land, according to the AP, undefeated. And now there's a Manning who will make his first start for the Longhorns. So this will be the very first one for Arch Manning. And Coach Sark said it has to be this way because of Quinn Ewers' health.
Arch is going to start at quarterback Saturday. You know, I feel like Quinn has made great strides ever since Saturday night into where he's gotten to. But you know, with my decision is, you know, I'm looking forward to the, you know, his future as a player, but also the future of the season for us and the longevity and getting him, you know, possibly one more week healthier for the long term, I think is good for us as we're getting ready for SEC play. So Arch is more than capable, as I think we all know. He's got, you know, a lot of, you know, confidence from his teammates and trust from his teammates to go out and play. Had a really good week of work, understands the plan, but it's different. You know, it's different when you're the starting quarterback as opposed to coming in cold off the bench as a backup. So different challenge for him, but I know that he'll be more than ready to go out and operate and play football at a high level for us.
But seriously, think about the buzz around the next generation of Manning, right? So he went in the second quarter, and he had 5 touchdowns, a 75-yard pass, a 67-yard run. I mean, this is the longest ever by a UT freshman. Mark, the first time in school history that a player recorded a run and throw of at least 65 yards in the same game. I don't know if I like the use of the word freshman there, because he's not a freshman, but rookie quarterback, I don't know if you could say that. Anyway, so you're talking about a guy who comes in with this second half that is jaw-dropping. And as Coach Sark says, he comes in cold off the bench. Imagine what he can do with a week of preparation as QB1. Now, here's the deal. The questions will begin. They will persist as long as Arch is out there. If he performs well again, he doesn't even have to dazzle the way that he did. But if he performs again that way, oh my gosh, imagine how much he'll get pelted with questions about Arch, or will you put Quinn Ewers back in?
I think we have a national championship caliber team, and he's the quarterback of that team. And I think we still have that in front of us to go do that. I think with some of the games that we have coming up down the road, this guy's going to be in New York for the Heisman, and whether he wins it or not, but he has the ability to do that. And I think he has the ability to be a top 5 NFL draft pick. So all the things that I think he's capable of are still out there for him. And this Saturday, him not playing in this game this Saturday, is not going to impact those 3 things that I know are goals that we've set for him and that he's working towards.
Yeah, good stuff from Coach Sark. And Quinn Ewers is resting this week, right? So they think he's making progress, but they've got one more, we'll call it I don't want to call it a cupcake because that's not fair, but one more soft type of entry game into the SEC before they play their first conference game late this month against Mississippi State. Then they have a bye week, so that should help if he's not healthy then. But they go back-to-back against Oklahoma, so that's the Texas State Fair in Dallas, and then Georgia, which is a great game in Austin. But those are some big-time games if they do believe that they're national championship caliber. Those are their gauges and their opportunities to prove and get the type of wins they want for the playoff. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I'm excited about seeing Arch Manning in his first start. Just fun to think of another Manning. And I do love the fact that he's stayed at Texas. He hasn't transferred, despite the fact that Quinn Ewers is a very good quarterback in front of him. Take the After Hours Game of the Week poll for the NFL. We've got four candidates up, and you can find that at Amy After Hours or at A-Law Radio. I know I said I'd put it up on Facebook, and I absolutely will. We'll do a little baseball coming up at the top of the hour because the AL Central is stacked. But I mentioned I have a homeowner issue. So Pete and anybody else, I'm looking for advice. We live in between two homes on our block, so we have two neighbors on either side. The neighbor that is on the corner had a catalytic converter stolen from their vehicle last year.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so I guess even though there was the Ring camera across the street from another one in our neighborhood, the officers, police were not able to catch them because they were wearing hoodies, and within 2 minutes, jacked up the car, took the catalytic converter. Okay, so that's the background. Now these neighbors are worried about the fact that they have no light in their backyard. It's a driveway, really. It's not, they don't have much of a yard back there. So their kitchen opens up onto what is concrete back. It's a paved road or paved driveway, I should say. And then there's a garage that's facing away from the house. So they don't really have a backyard, very little green space. They have mounted the brightest light in the history of the world on their garage. And because their bedroom is on the front, it doesn't bother them. They are leaving it on all night long. Do you want to know what's happening? Our bedroom, so the master bedroom on our house is on that side, is now lit up like the middle of the daytime. It is so bright. We've got blinds. We've got curtains. You can still see everything in the bedroom once your eyes adjust. And after Bob told them that the light was really bright, so they decided to mount it on the garage, they didn't make any changes, point the light a different direction, cover it up, nothing. Like, put a cover on it so it points downward. It is so bright. And I have a hard time sleeping with bright lights. So I don't know what to do because they clearly are planning on leaving it on every single night.
Oh, that's a tough one because I would have did what Bob did and approached them. And if they didn't do it,
They didn't change a thing. They just said, okay, and kept mounting the light.
And if you call the town on them, they're your neighbors, they're right next door, then you're getting into a war.
I don't care. A war?
Yeah.
It's not just your light.
No, I know.
It's lighting up our entire backyard in the middle of the night. And the light is shining not just directly into our master bedroom, but the house on the other side of me.
Get them involved.
It's a lot taller than us, and so it's shining into their bedrooms too.
I would get them involved too.
Oh, so it's a tag team?
No, I think that would help because you already asked them and they really haven't changed it.
No, he continued mounting the light. It's two nights now and it's been on both nights.
Look, I get his concern, but if you have both neighbors coming after you about that, you got to adjust it. It has to be done, or you have to call the town.
Yeah, so that's actually what my mom suggested. She suggested finding out if the town has a light ordinance. Because it's brighter than a street light. I have a photo. It's so bright. It shines like the sun. And so we are going to figure out with the town, which I don't want to do. If my neighbor came to me and asked, I would turn the light off or change the light, right? But they weren't willing to at first. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.